It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to special episode number 575 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is a great doubleheader Kickstarter week, and it all kicks off with Stephen Call and Lyndon Rachenka, who have a Kickstarter underway for The Laundrymen, which will conclude Friday, March 3 at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. It's described this way. The Laundrymen is an ongoing comic series about two men who work out of a laundromat and solve supernatural crimes and mysteries. Think of it like Ghostbusters meets X-Files with a splash of supernatural. We discuss who the various characters are, how the book came to be, and what we can expect from them in the future. Then everything wraps up with my interview with Anthony Stokes about his terrific book called Intrusive Thoughts. He has a Kickstarter underway as well, and it will conclude on Thursday, February 23rd at 8 a.m. It's described as an atmospheric horror comic that deals with themes of loneliness, anxiety, and depression. We explore who the various characters are, how the series came to be, and what we can expect from Anthony in the months ahead. Thoughts can't hurt you, right? I'm sure you'll enjoy what everyone has to say in this special episode. There's a lot to get to in this episode. So let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast, Stephen Call. How you doing, Stephen?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing very good.
Okay, and Lyndon Rachenka. How you doing, Lyndon?
And I'm doing so well. Thank you so much for having us, Wayne. Really appreciate being here.
It's good to talk with you guys. You guys have a book called The Laundrymen, which has a Kickstarter going that's going to run from, as we stand, February 3rd until about March the 3rd. So we're going to do a little talking and promoting of the book and getting things done. There's 82 pages in this book, so this is a nice long read, which I always enjoy. And it's called The Laundrymen. Let's see. Why don't I talk to the writer here, Lyndon, and why don't you tell us why it's called The Laundrymen?
Well, it's called The Laundrymen because the story is about these two almost mercenary-like monster hunters, and they operate out of a laundromat, which they use both to launder the sort of illegal money that they're paid for their jobs, and to tie into the theme that what they do fundamentally is clean up messes that the world doesn't see or isn't ready to see.
Okay. Now, did you guys co-create this, Stephen, or is this, did Lyndon come up with it and then you brought in the graphics? How'd this work?
No, we definitely co-created it. All of our stories we've always come up with together. Usually starts with us like going on a drive to the comic store or sitting down having a beer, and one of us comes up with an idea and we workshop the heck out of it until we have something to write. Then Lyndon goes hard to work on a script.
Okay, because speaking of that, it looks like you guys have co-created and illustrated Infinite Universe, There Was Another Life, and let's see. Other ones, you've illustrated more stories there, Stephen. Looks like Dirksen versus the Demons from Mars.
Absolutely, yeah.
You did that one, and let's see. Let me see what else that Lyndon's been doing. What Will Not Last, and There Was Another Life. Is that the same one you guys worked on it together?
Yep. Yeah, so that's a six-issue series that the two of us are currently working on. It's actually set to release later this year in 2023 through SourcePoint Press. So it's not actually out yet, but it will be hopefully later this year.
So is The Laundrymen going to be self-published?
That's the plan.
It's going to be self-published. Yeah, we plan to kickstart it, as we said. And thankfully, we've gotten a fair amount of support to develop the series through some grant funding here where we are. So we're actually currently working on all the way through issue 9 right now.
Wow. Wow. So how long is that series going to be?
As long as they'll let us make it. We really enjoy doing it. So and the way we've set up the story and the way these characters work is we can do a different story all the time because it's always about a different mission that they have.
Okay. Okay, let's get back to The Laundryman. Book one is titled The Life Thief, the way that it says. Sometimes there are problems that can't be explained. Monsters, aliens, magic. When those problems show up, there are only two people who can help you, if you can find them, The Laundryman. And Infinite Studios is it Infinite Studio or Studios? I always get that.
It's Infinite Studio, and that's the imprint that Steven and I work out of on all of our projects together. And our website is infinitestudio.ca for all of your listeners. And we're actually giving away a free digital comic on our website right now. So if you go to infinitestudio.ca/freecomic, you can get a free 20-page black and white comic that Steven and I worked on earlier this summer.
Oh, cool. But while we're talking about the internet and good things like that, Steven, why don't you tell us how people can keep up with you regarding social media?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm on Instagram at stevecallart.com. So STEV, not .com, STEVKAULART. On Instagram, and then my last name and first name on Twitter. So call Steven.
Okay. And how about you, Lyndon?
On Twitter, it's just my last name, which is Rachenka. That's RADCHENKA. And on Instagram, it's the same, except my first initial in front of it. So L Rachenka, and that's it.
Okay. So I usually do that towards the end, but so many people get mad at me and say, why do you wait till the end to do that? What if we want to try to find them before that? I thought, well, okay, I'll try to mix it up as much as I can. So what was the first thing that you guys worked together on? Was that which one was that?
That was Infinite Universe.
Yeah. Go ahead, Steven.
Yeah. That's the first book that we did together. It's a science fiction book. Kind of like our take on the whole blasting through the galaxy, looking for new planets. And it was a wonderful first book to do. It took a little while, but we got it done. And it's quite a nice read. I don't know. Lyndon's got a good pitch for it. I'll let him go for it.
Yeah. So Infinite Universe came out in 2018. We self-published. That was our first book that we made. And we self-published it before it was subsequently picked up for republication by a small local publisher here. But it's about six humans who are tasked with finding a new planet to live on because Earth is failing. And so they discover this planet that they believe will support life. And they find out that it is already supporting life when they do that. So it what started out as a sort of a science fiction action adventure tale really ends up becoming sort of a morality story about what humans have done to deserve, if they deserve a second chance, and what happens when they find sort of another life form on a planet.
Okay, very good. Now, it looks like you released The Laundryman by individual issues. Is that how this came out?
So Laundryman, when we started working on this series, we really wanted to test out the concept. And we've been working on the first three issues, which are what this book, The Laundryman Book One, is. But because we've been working on the first three issues for so long, we've been sitting on the complete and finished issue one for a significant amount of time. And so at the beginning of 2022, we printed off a limited print run of 100 copies of just issue one printed in black and white. And we took it to shows with us and we hand sold them. And we were really surprised and thrilled that we completely sold out of our copies in three shows.
Cool. Very cool. Do you guys go to cons and stuff like that and sell them as well?
Absolutely. Do, yeah. Right now, we try to go to about half a dozen per year, and we're going to try and grow that to 10 or 12 over the next year or two.
Very cool, very cool. Now, let's get into the book itself. There's two guys in the laundryman, right? Is that right, Lyndon?
Yes.
Okay. As I look in there, they sort of resemble you guys, don't they?
So in the first issue, there's sort of a cold opening sequence where our two main characters take on a werewolf. And then as it transitions to the following morning, Steven and I make a cameo appearance at the laundromat that the two men work out of before they appear.
Yeah, we're the first faces you see.
Okay, then move along after that.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first one was a science fiction. This one tends to be a little more horror type stuff. Were you guys trying to see how what kind of horror storytelling you wanted to tell?
In a sense, yeah. The way this story ended up kind of developing out as we were talking about it, it really lent itself to a bit of a science fiction horror genre. The way the main antagonist in the book operates is in a way where you never really know where they are and or who they are, really. So it allows us to kind of keep that, like, something's just around the corner type of vibe. And it was a lot of fun to draw that kind of thing, to find subtle ways to entice the reader to kind of get a little spooked and see what's coming up. And it's a fun, enjoyable genre, but allows us to be a little more science fiction-y as well with the type of monsters and stuff.
So, Stephen, did you do the coloring?
Yeah, the
way we've described this. Wait, I was going to ask Stephen, did you do the coloring as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I do everything from penciling all the way to coloring right to the end.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was interested, because there's an interesting choice of colors. Sort of, a lot of times it's like kind of a darkish red to a yellow, orange kind of thing. So I guess more of a horror feel to it, with a little bit of purple in the background, stuff like that too. So that's kind of a different look to it.
Yeah, I kind of choose my colors. I like to try to make every aspect of the art feed into the mood of the scene. So I find color is a big part of that. I'm a big movie watcher, love movies, and I find, like, color is such a factor in that. Like, you watch, like, a David Fincher film, and like, you can tell they just leaned on the color to, like, really give you a vibe. And that's kind of where I get that from. And I'm just looking for a way for every aspect of the art to indicate a feeling for the reader.
Oh, cool. Now, I interrupted you, Lyndon. What were you going to say?
All I was going to say is, we were talking about the book fitting into the horror genre, was as a point of reference when we've described this series to people, we've often described it as a mix of Ghostbusters meets X-Files meets some supernatural to it. So because these guys are traveling around and we're building our story arcs in three issue stories, it allows us to dip into stories that lean a little more heavily to the horror genre, like this one, or stories that lean a little more heavily to the science fiction genre, or mix the two. And we find that the ability to do that is a lot of fun, because it allows us to look at the different perceptions and expectations we have within genre and look at how we can subvert them and change them so that we can do things the reader isn't necessarily expecting.
Okay. Because in this book, you know, like you mentioned, you started off with a werewolf, and then we get into some other things. There's what looks like one of them refers to it as a mummy hanging off one of those meat cleaver type things. And one guy says, how's it look dry? And he says, like a mummy. And then he says, like, there's no blood. Yes. So that's kind of an interesting thing. So the is there a specific kind of supernatural force or monster going on in this book? Or are they going through, like, a variety of different things happening, Lyndon?
So in this book, the two characters, Brian and Wade, they're investigating a murder that's happened at Wade's small town where he grew up. And when they arrive, they discover this dried out corpse hanging in a meat locker. And they discuss what they think it might be based on how it looks. And they discover that it is drained of blood. And what we end up dealing with at the end of issue one is this science fiction, almost like Lovecraftian tentacle looking monster. And that ends up being the main antagonist for this entire 3-issue arc.
Okay.
Spoiler alert for those that are looking to back our Kickstarter.
Okay, because that's really kind of interesting. So who came up with the tentacle thing? Was that something the both of you created as far as that goes?
I give full credit to Steven for that. Steven, how did you come up with the tentacle monster?
Tentacle monster. I mean, my character designs I tend to come up with on the fly. I think of them as a sketch and I just go until it looks good. But this book and Infinite Universe and a couple of other things, I guess I kind of had a theme of drawing amphibious monsters, like things with big stretchy mouths and stuff like that. So this was just another product of that. I wanted to challenge myself and see if I could draw tentacles from panel to panel and figure out a quick way to draw them. And it proved to be a really good looking monster, in my opinion. I was very happy with it.
Do we find out what kind of a monster it is eventually?
Yes, we do. We find it out at the end of the 3rd issue, and that's a major spoiler.
Okay. All right, we won't spoil that. I hate to spoil stuff too much, but I kind of usually figure the 1st issue is a place where we can talk about. Now, the two main characters, they end up staying with a family, right?
They end up staying briefly with Wade's childhood friends, Larry and Emma, who are seemingly the only two people left in this town that Wade is actually very close with.
Okay. So that's kind of interesting about that. Of course, there's developments, their interreaction as the book comes along. I don't want to spoil that stuff, but pay attention to all those people because interesting things happen to them as they go forward.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good stuff. So they seem to come across a law enforcement person, I think in the 2nd issue too. So we're gonna come across some more people, not just those four, as we go along, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's law enforcement. There's the people. There's the townsfolk that both work as local security and that work in the grocery, that work in the cafe, the breakfast joint that the guys eat breakfast in. There's a lot of other characters that are in the book.
There is a sense of loneliness in the town, though, that I really like, because it does add to what all amounts to be a spoiler for the book, unfortunately. But the number of people you see does make you question what the heck is actually going on in the town.
Well, and one of the details that isn't really a spoiler is that this town used to be a mining town, and the mine has since shut down. And so one of Wade's things that bothers him as the story progresses is how much the town seems to be changing from the one that he remembers growing up, and how much emptier it seems.
Okay. Now, Stephen, when it comes to the characters, do you pattern them after somebody you know, after like a well-known person? Are they people that you develop in your own head? How do you come up with how these characters look like?
I think that goes back to movies again. I tend to, when we're designing a story, like I tend to have like this fantasy. I think about like, well, who would play these characters in a movie? And that kind of becomes my anchor person. And I try to like draw that person, but because I'm drawing fast and I'm taking the time to get perfect likeness, it transforms from that person's face into my character's face. And that's kind of how the image of the character comes from. So it does come from like a bit of a fandom thing where I'm like, oh man, this guy would be so good to play Brian, or this guy would be great to play Wade. And then just through drawing them through, we'll call it a comedy of errors or a series of mistakes, I create the character's face. And that's
in most scenarios where my characters' like designs come from.
Okay, so let's go to the who they are. Lyndon, how do you develop who those characters are before Stephen gets to draw them? Are they based on people you know, just like the images? Are they people you know? Are they characters you develop in your own head, or you and Stephen work out together? How do you come up with them?
It's a really good question. It's not something that I've actually been asked before, I don't think, so thank you. I think part of it is that fundamentally they're all, I'm pulling from different, either different people I've met or different parts of myself and mixing them together until I can find a person whose actions make sense and until they become their own person. So it's a mix of the media that I'm watching, the books that I'm reading, and the daily interactions that I'm having with people. And then I'm taking my own lived experience and different sides of myself, and I'm twisting and turning them almost like a Rubik's cube in my brain until they start to resemble a person with actions that would make sense. And then once I start writing them, you have that sort of that first draft of a person. I start writing them down, and I find that the more you write someone, a character, the more that character becomes their own person. And at that point, you almost just need to get out of the way and let them do what it is that they're going to do. And you just write that down. Sorry, that sounds like a really like high art, pretentious answer, but it really felt like the further I got into writing this, the less thinking I had to do, the more it just, their next action made sort of natural sense based on their previous actions.
Okay. So who is Brian? Talk about who he is as well as where he came from.
So Brian is one of our two protagonists. He's a chain smoking, sort of surly, drives the car member of the team. And he's the sort of gruff, direct, no shits taken member of the team. And he foils Wade very well, who is sort of the more personable, fluffier, kind of more human. I don't want to say humane because they're both humane, but sort of the more of the people person role of the team.
Okay. What about the family that they end up staying with? Where did they come from?
Larry and Emma are two of Wade's oldest friends, and actually Larry is a childhood friend of Wade's from when he was growing up. So Wade has a lot of history with Larry, and Larry's sort of that friend that never moved out of town that anyone who's spent considerable time in a small town will know and hopefully recognize.
So is the laundromat in the hometown, or where is that located?
Stephen, where is the laundromat located?
I don't know if we give a city name, but the laundromat is not located in the hometown. It's the way I see it when I was drawing, we were building up the story is if they were in America, the laundromat would be at least one state over. So they definitely go on a heck of a longer road trip through some barren highway to get to the small town, to get to Willstead. I think the laundromat is just kind of, it's in a neighboring state, we'll say. Maybe we'll establish that in the next book as to exactly where it might be. Maybe it's like Midwest. Springfield. Yeah, we'll just say, oh, you know, New York's to the east, California's to the west, but we'll have them right next door.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, they show identification that says they're from homeland. Is that homeland? It's what's the word for it? The U.S. agency.
Homeland Security.
Kind of. So these guys are they're mercenaries. They take shady contracts as well as government contracts to do these types of jobs that they're doing. And one of the things that we wanted to make sure was like visible in the book was that these guys, you know, much like a lot of these kind of tropes, have an ID for everything. They've got their picture on a badge for each agency, all the three letter agencies. But with saying like Homeland on there, the joke was kind of like, you know, when you flip the badge, you go, we're Homeland. And so we just wrote Homeland on the badge. So it's supposed to indicate like Homeland Security or something like that. But they've got a badge for everything. Yeah.
Yeah. The reality is they have these fake badges, essentially, that they have for sort of any occasion. And in this occasion, they decide they're going to take out their Homeland badges and pretend that they're Homeland Security to get access to a crime scene.
Okay. Now, when we first see them, they're having an interesting conversation. The two, I think it's Wade is saying the difference between a poltergeist and a banshee is corporeal form. And then Brian says they're all ghosts. It doesn't matter. And we get back to him. He says, of course it does. When you're up against the poltergeist, you're not going to be able to use something. So I get a sense that this is kind of when the two of them are talking to each other, this is the kind of conversation they get into a lot of the time. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Yeah. The purpose of this exact conversation was to both show the relationship that these guys have, and the conversations that they have, but also to establish to the reader that there is a larger world of all of the sorts of supernatural things that go on in the background that we don't necessarily see.
Okay. So the first issue you've kind of talked a little bit about. What can you tell us without spoiling too much about the second and third issues? Not much, apparently.
Well, in what way?
Yeah. In what way? Yeah.
Well, I want to tickle people's interest in the story. As far as like things that are going to happen that we can look out for without spoiling too much, are they going to run into a lot of peril? Are they going to get separated? Are they going to? What kind of things are can we look forward to happening? As far as to keep our interest and to make us pay attention to what's going on.
I would definitely say the story as you go through the three issues is like it's a trek. So the characters, the four, we'll say our four main characters, like we've got our protagonist and we have the friends from the town. They end up in a lot of situations together. The story is a bit of a trek, so they go from place to place to place to place until they finally end up in their final stage. And it kind of does play a bit out like a Scooby-Doo mystery. There is splitting up, there is isolation, there is there's action. There's one page I did that was, how many panels was that? Was that 20 panels? Linden?
16 or 18
panels, which was the purpose of that page was to really show the reader like the kind of peril they've gotten themselves into, to indicate what it would be like to be stuck in the mind that they're in and trying to get to the end to where they need to go. So there's definitely peril for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, Linden's like more he can say.
Well, at the fundamental level, this story that we're telling is a mystery. So it's these two guys trying to solve the murder and the people that are going missing in this small rural town. And to do that, they're going to have to challenge sort of all of their preconceived ideas of what type of monster this could be. And they're going to have to face the dangers of going up against something that they haven't necessarily seen before. And what goes into that is both gunfights and sneaking around and being separated and, you know, fleeing for your life in certain instances before they finally figure out what it is they're up against and how they can defeat it.
I always liked that about the X-Files, was Mulder and Scully. They were endlessly getting the tar beat out of them. There was one time when they were facing little green bugs, and I thought, boy, that's not very menacing. But then at the very end of the episode, they get stuck with them in a Jeep, and the bugs just chew the daylights out of them, and then we see them at the end in a hospital trying to recover from the bug bites and stuff like that. I always liked it when there's real honest-to-goodness danger involved, because a lot of the times people would look around the corner and see a monster going away and stuff, and there wasn't a lot of danger. But I like it when the characters have to face the peril. And obviously that happens a lot, because I can see already one of the times when Brian is, shall we say, in danger from that creature at one point. So I think that those mm-hmm. kinds of things are good. I like it when there's honest-to-goodness danger involved with it. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this all resolves and how they're going to figure this out, because I don't – that's something I'm going to be really interested in, is how they sort out what kind of a creature this is and how you actually do overcome this challenge. Are there clues along the way, Lyndon, as far as what's going on and what they can do?
Yeah, there. We tried to leave a little trail of breadcrumbs that so that once you've read the book, you can go back and you can see all of sort of the pieces that we put in front of the reader and didn't necessarily draw their eye to the first time. So I know for a fact that without spoiling too much of the mystery, even in Stephen's art, he's putting pieces in that I'm not necessarily addressing in my writing or my lettering. And it really helps make sort of the answer more apparent by the end of the story. And I also agree with you that I really felt like there needed to be the sense of danger throughout the guys going from scene to scene and collecting clues. And that's why, towards the end of the first issue, as we said, they come up against this monster, and the issue two opens with this sort of gunfight against it. And then issue two wraps up with them losing their guns and going up against the monster again. So now they don't have that advantage that they had at the end of the first issue. And it sort of became this idea of how can we make this more and more dangerous to these guys, and how can they find their way through it and come out the other end and still, you know, succeed in this mission that they've taken on.
I get a kick because in the X-Files, the cigarette smoking man was one of the bad guys. But in this book, the two main characters are the cigarette smokers, which I found I'm sort of curious because, you know, you don't see many people smoke these days. Is there a reason why the two characters smoke? Is that to make them us relate to them on some level? I'm just kind of curious about that.
Well, first off, I love the TV show Mad Men.
Okay.
And that's all that they do. I'll let Stephen fill in the second part of this answer, but I also like that having them smoking gives them something to do on panel when we have a lot of dialogue that we have to get out.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons that the cigarette smoking is in there. One big reason was, it's a fun reason, but that when we were neither of us smokes. When we were developing the idea of the story, we were just like, what decade is it in? And we're like, let's make it ambiguous. Let's make the cars look different. Let's let people find their own way into the timeline. And we're like, oh yeah, and they got to be smoking all the time. Like it's just got to look like that. And my reasoning for that is when you look at like old mystery movies and stuff like that, there's a certain tone you give a character when they're the protagonist and they're dealing with a lot as far as the story goes or personally, they're almost always like smoking a cigarette to cope with everything. And so with these guys doing what they're doing, we thought it appropriate with how much they're dealing with that nobody else gets to see that it's a pretty good chance they're going to be chain smoking. And it just makes for a really gloomy, gloomy vibe for when you're seeing. And there's a lot of points in the book when they've just gotten out of a mess and they're lighting up a cigarette. And like they go from being like really stressed out to like relaxed. And it's like, it's almost like a lifeline for these guys, as it is for a lot of people, I assume.
Yeah. What I appreciate about the smoking thing also is that it gives me another tool to help express character emotion without me having to have them explicitly say how they're feeling. So as Steven said, you know, they use it to blow off steam, or they're using it to express a frustration. It really is just sort of another way to emote for a character. It's just, and I think that is really, it's helpful to have that when you're writing.
Uh-huh. It's interesting because, you know, you're right. Those talking head things can really be a disaster. The Dresden Files, the guy that writes the Dresden Files, he was taking a writing class, and I told him, under no circumstances should you have talking heads. And so what did he do? He brought a skull head into it, and that skull head basically, all he does is talk. And he decided he was going to go against the type of that, and he made him into this talking
literal
head.
Literal talking head, yeah.
Yeah, which I got a kick out of, because he's kind of the smart aleck of the bunch, and he's also knowledgeable, and Dresden goes to him for information and stuff like that, and he basically sits there and talks with them, and I always get a smile when the two of them are talking, because there he is talking to the talking head, and I get a kick out of those kinds of things. Now, one of the things I got a kick out of, there's one of the early pages of one of the books. It's called The Laundryman, and one of the early pages shows somebody doing laundry, which I got a kick out of. There's a gun and there's a badge and stuff all going around inside of looks like it's being washed in a laundry and stuff. Is that part of the story, or is that there just for us to enjoy the comparison to the name of the book?
So you're talking about the full page splash between issues two and three. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Steven.
Yeah. That's actually one of the earlier covers I designed for the book. We liked it a lot, but it wasn't quite, the grabbing image for, say, a poster.
Dynamic.
But it wasn't quite dynamic enough, but it's like a perfect B cover or like an issue 3 cover or something like that, because it just kind of pulls all the concepts together, and then you kind of just see these objects. And honestly, Wayne, it's great to hear you say that about that page, because I'll be honest, I didn't think much of it, but you're the second person I think who has called back to it and and actually picked out the images in the washing machine and stuff. And I'm like, wow, that, I guess I did a pretty okay job on that one. It's visible. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Now let's talk a little bit about the Kickstarter itself. As far as, the three issues are all going to be available on the Kickstarter, right?
Correct. Yeah. We're printing it as a single volume. The initial Kickstarter goal is going to print the entire book with black and white interiors. However, our hope is to reach the stretch goal that will allow us to print the entire book in color.
Oh, so it's going to be black and white initially. Okay. That'll be interesting.
Maybe. The idea with this Kickstarter was that with the challenges right now and logistics of shipping and printing and fuel costs and costs of printing books, things are very expensive. And we wanted to still put this book out into the world. And so when we printed Laundryman black and white earlier in the year, was we wanted to see if this was a book that would translate well to black and white. And we were happy to see that it looked really good. And everyone that picked up one of the issues before we sold out seemed to really enjoy how it looked. And so we've structured this Kickstarter so that if we can't complete a massive, you know, $10,000 goal, this is still a book, this is still a story that we can put into people's hands.
Okay, that's of course, I didn't get a chance to see the black and white. All I saw was the color, which is why I was asking about Steven's use of color and things like that, because that's what I saw. I don't know. Do you guys have a preference? I imagine, Steven, since you've colored it, you would prefer that everybody got to see the colors that you did.
I think it would be amazing if everybody got to see the colors that we did. I'm so happy with how they turned out, and how it's kind of like my first foray into keeping colors consistent through this many pages of comics. And while it does, honestly, it honestly looks amazing in black and white. It really does. But if we can get to a point in that Kickstarter where people deem us worthy of printing our colors, it would be amazing. It would look so cool.
Okay.
Yeah. As Wayne, I'm sure you're familiar with, you know, printing books, but to print a book in black and white versus to print it in color, you know, the cost is a quarter or a third to print in black and white than it is in color.
Right.
And so we're very cognizant right now of the state of the world and how much of an ask it would be for us to tell people that we want to run this book, and we can only do it in color, and we need to ask for five figures of funding to print it. And so we decided that we'd put in the work to find a way to not have to ask that much commitment, unless people really love the story, in which case we've already done the work. It's ready to be printed in color too, but we want to make sure this book gets out into the world and into people's hands no matter what.
Because I've often asked creators, you know, if they do a book in black and white, is it an artistic choice or is it a financial choice? And oftentimes it's both. Mm-hmm. You know, they decide to do it in a way that that gets it in people's hands, number one. That's the primary thing. But I've seen it in color. I kind of like to see it in color, to be honest with you. I think I like the colors.
Well, we do have we have three preview pages on our Kickstarter, which will be at laundryman.ca. And you can see what the pages look like in black and white. And, you know, we printed the entire first issue in black and white, and it looks really good. So I hope that people who can see the pages in black and white think that these look pretty good also.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, how are you going to move forward? I probably don't want to get too far ahead of the Kickstarter, but if you are doing the first three issues are in the Kickstarter, are you going to go back to self-printing individual issues until you get enough together to do another Kickstarter? Are you going to move to another Kickstarter? How are you going to move forward after the... Because I'm assuming the Kickstarter will be successful, because I think it's a great story and it's something that people, I think, are going to want to read. Figuring it's a success, how would you prefer to go forward? Lyndon, why don't you answer that?
If this Kickstarter is a success, sometime around this time next year, we'll be launching the Kickstarter for book two of The Laundryman, containing issues 4 through 6. Those pages are already written. Steven is already working on the art for them, where the book will already be finished by the time we get to that point. And so if people want more Laundryman, there will be more Laundryman. We don't necessarily need to print single issues until then. We did that for the first issue because we wanted to sort of test the concept. We may not do that for every single issue. We may just move to printing these in, you know, 80-page books going forward, because our story model is that each of our story arcs is going to be about 3 issues, so about 70 pages. Maybe there's some backup matter in there also. And so the hope is that people will love this book, and then we'll be able to do this again in 1 year and do the next part of the story. And if they love that book, then we'll be able to do it again the year after that, and so on and so forth.
So, Stephen, you guys have future arcs already started and in mind for how to keep the book going as far as that goes.
Well, yeah, we absolutely do. It's, you know, right now we've got words for 4, 5, and 6, or most of that, and then 7, 8, and 9 after that, which would be books 2, then books 3. But in Laundryman book 1, in Life Thief, there is an epilogue that it's an eight pages, right, Lyndon?
6 pages.
Six pages. It's a 6-page epilogue that it's kind of your standard, like, Elsewhere story, where you go there and it shows you a character in another universe. And that's actually a tease into book 2. Something fun about that one is if we get to print this in color, those last 6 pages, they're actually colored by a friend of ours, Zach Schuster. They were a fun story that we did, and it works beautifully with Laundryman and those characters. Those characters in that epilogue will be seen again in book 2.
So, yeah, so we've got more coming. It's something we want to keep going, and we really hope people love it so that we can keep printing it and keep getting it in people's hands. It would be wonderful to see this take off.
You know, this book would be great as either an animated show or a live action horror type story. Have you guys considered any of those kinds of things? Maybe getting somebody who can animate stuff, or maybe somebody who can do a live action, maybe even do it in black and white and turn this into some kind of a TV show, because all these cable channels got 24 hours worth of programming. They're looking for something to fill all that space. The Laundryman might be a good place to have that kind of a thing.
Well, you're not definitely the first person who said that to us. Yeah.
I was going to say it's definitely a common conversation we have. It might come from how we've structured the stories, and because the whole plan was we wanted a series that we could basically do until people were done reading it. So we went with the Monster of the Week genre, where we can bring in recurring characters and stuff like that. And I think because like Lyndon's dialogue is so good, it lends itself really well to some form of a television show or limited series. And it would be really cool to see that in the future. It is just a comic right now. But obviously there's dreams, so that'd be really cool.
Now, also to say, we've said before that we want to keep making this as long as people like reading it. We do have an idea of how the series would end when it gets to that point.
Mm-hmm.
So that we're not just writing sort of into the sunset. Like there is a way that we know that we want the story to end, and it really comes down to how much story will we be allowed to tell before we have to tell that final story.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any chance that we might see some of these monsters come back at some point?
I think I don't know if you'll see the book one monsters come back. You might. It depends on which monsters in book one we're talking about. But definitely, I think book two is going to have a lot of cool characters in it, and I think we'll see them bounce around throughout. You know, an eventual series if it comes to life.
And I do have plans to have there to be callbacks in future stories to these monsters in the first arc. But this exact antagonist from the first three issues, you know, how do I say this without spoiling? The laundryman managed to clean up the mess.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And yeah, it's called on Kickstarter, The Laundryman Book One, The Life Thief. And it's described as an ongoing comic series about two mercenary monster hunters who operate out of a laundromat, which makes it unique. So I think you guys are doing a great job. I think this is going to be a fun read. I'm looking forward to being able to read these stories and reading more from you guys in the future. I think it's great stuff. So all I can say is, Linton and Stephen, keep up the wonderful stuff. And I want to see more of The Laundryman is what I want to see. So you guys keep it up.
Will do. Really appreciate that, Wayne. Yeah.
We'll make more if we can.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
It's great to welcome to the podcast Anthony Stokes from a fascinating book called Intrusive Thoughts, which is an indie comic that is something special, something I haven't read before. So how are you doing, Anthony?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you for having me.
It's good to talk with you. So let's start out with what you've done. Is this your first comic, or have you done comics before?
This is my second comic book. So I have my previous series, Decay, which came out in 2021. So this is, something a little different.
Okay, well, why don't you talk about Decay before we get into Intrusive Thoughts? What was that about?
Absolutely. So Decay was basically a modern take on Frankenstein. It was a guy that was wrong place, wrong time. He gets shot at a house party. And then so he comes back from the dead via voodoo from his sister. And then he gets revenge. So it's a very gritty revenge thriller. And then I've released that in 2021. Someone, I'm finishing up issue 4 right now. So that'll be coming out soon.
Oh, wow. Okay. How many issues are in that series?
It's going to be 5. So we are almost done.
Wow. Okay. So when's that going to be? I guess when it's done, you'll put it out.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking for April. It depends how this campaign goes, of course. But I'm looking at like April, May-ish.
Okay, well, that'd be good. Now, if people want to get your books, and this will also apply to Intrusive Thoughts, are they available online? How do they get them?
It's going to be through Kickstarter. I release all my my books through Kickstarter. So if you go to Kickstarter and search Intrusive Thoughts, you'll be able to find the series.
Okay, that'd be great. Now, when does the Kickstarter starts when?
It's active right now.
Right now, okay. And when does it end?
It's going to be like the 23rd of February.
Okay, so it's coming, so that'll be good to see. So you're self-publishing it, and let's see, you're the writer and the creator, and DNS is the illustrator colorist, and letterer is Mirror Mortal. Kind of funny, almost sounds like Mirror Mortal.
Yeah, I'm going to ask then if that was there was a play on that.
Okay, so that's good. So when did you start writing Intrusive Thoughts then?
I actually started writing it last year around, I think, May.
Wow.
So, May, and then we wrote the script, had a cool idea, had a good direction. I'd worked with DNS before, and okay. I'd worked with him before, so it was a pretty smooth process. We got it done pretty quickly.
Great. Okay, so how did you come across DNS? Is he a friend or somebody you saw online? How did you meet him?
I'm always looking for covers. He did 3 covers for me for the Decay series. I'm always looking for variant artists, and it works double because you get a style that's distinct from the main kind of style of the original art, and then you can kind of test the waters to see if they'd be good for a longer series, and that's essentially what happened.
Okay, wow. So that's good. This book intrigues me because not many comics center around a person of color. And this one does. So why don't you tell people what Intrusive Thoughts is about?
Absolutely. So it's about he's a kid, he's a loner, he's an orphan, he lives with his foster parents, and his foster parents kind of use him as a paycheck. They kind of just go and jet set. So he's a lonely guy, and he has all kinds of problems. He has, sleep paralysis, night terrors, migraines, insomnia. And one day, a bully is beating him up, and his sleep paralysis demon comes into the real world and attacks him, bites him. So it's kind of like a mystery as to how that happened, a horror mystery.
Okay. Now, several things happen, and I don't want to spoil too much. But it's 32 pages long, and one of the first things we see is him talking to a counselor, or is that a psychiatrist?
Yeah, a therapist.
Okay.
You can say.
That's good. I get a kick out of their dialogue because he says, college is stressful, it may be mental. And I like the main character says, that's why I'm here.
Yeah. Like, what else would I be doing here? Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. And then he says, do you feel alone? And his response is, I am alone. And that really struck me interestingly.
Well, yeah. It's about, because I feel a lot about, I haven't been to therapy, like an extended amount of therapy, but I feel as a lot of it is like realigning perception, right? Like realigning kind of your worldview in ways that kind of just like make you look at the world better, And then this character's been through so much therapy that he's like, I've heard this before. It's not working. You know, let's try something different.
Right, right. And then, of course, they talk for a little while. He does one of my very favorite things. They talk about how much water is in a glass. Is it half full or half empty? And his response is, it's half.
Yeah.
Which I love because, you know, I've always got people do that. And I've always wondered why people don't just say that there's half.
It's half, right? Yeah. The perception is less important when you look at it, you know, yeah, like literally.
I love that. I thought that was great. And then of course, the main character says, I'm sorry, I'm being an ass. And the counselor says, well, it's okay. I understand you've been through a lot. But then he says something really interesting to me about that he wants him to start keeping a log of the night terrors, or better yet, make illustrations since you like to draw. And so he starts to do those kinds of things, and that's where things go all kersplat. Really interesting stuff going on. Now, you know, there's something about the high school era and high school age kids that comics just seem to thrive on. Is he in high school or is he in college?
He's in high school, but he's going into college. Okay. So I would think that once you leave your foster parents, he doesn't have anybody at that point. So it's like extra stress. Like college is stressful anyway, and then you add that little caveat. And like I said, he's not too close with his foster parents to begin with. So
right.
it's kind of stressful, you know?
Well, then of course we see him in high school. And he's so tired that he doesn't realize what he's half the stuff he's doing. He ends up stepping on the shoes of I guess it's the bully guy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And bully does not take well to that.
Nope.
Shall we say. And things go all, again, things go downhill from there. And that's where the school counselor comes in, a different person. This is a woman. And she offers medication, and he says, no, it won't make anything any better. And he gets sent to detention for a week.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes on in detention there, they can go on the computer there. So he gets on the computer and does stuff there. And I got a kick out of that. And then, of course, something that happens very early in the book that really intrigued me is We one of the first things we see is him walking in the darkness, and he goes, make it stop. Mm-hmm. And then a red truck comes up, and they start honking at him. And then we go back to that story later on. And I don't know if you want to spoil this part. You may not want to, because the guy asks him a question, and his response is different than what I expected. So I was just kind of curious, is that – because we're getting kind of into the book. This is on page 25, and I don't want to spoil stuff.
You can spoil it away.
Okay, well, what happens is the guy comes out of the truck, and Chris comes up yelling, running at him, and he yells at him, says, you trying to get hit? And the main guy goes, yeah. And that puts, yeah. That puts the truck driver off. He kind of looks at him and questions, and then turns around and takes his hat off and goes back to the truck. Which I thought was a very interesting thing. And then, of course, we go back to the bully who comes in and has some stuff with that. And I don't want to spoil, because I think that's a very important part of the book.
Right.
And we get to see some of his perception of what's going on. And the fact that the night terrors are more than just his dreams. He kind of sees them sometimes in real life as well, obviously. Which is something really special about that. Now, how many books are going to be in this series?
It's going to be 5 or 6. It's going to be a pretty small, it's going to be a pretty short series.
And you guys are going to put this out. Are you going to Kickstarter each issue?
Yeah, that's the goal right now. You know, you always want to have some flexibility. You might want to do the Kickstarter, you know, maybe double up on issues. So it all depends. But as of right now, the goal is to kickstart every individual one.
Okay. So the first issue, based on what I'm seeing, you basically got the first issue in the can.
Yeah, the first issue was done. I always try to get it in advance, because you're for me, it's you get it, the most the bulk of it out of the way. You can give it to people to review. You can do so many different things. You can have it print ready by the time the Kickstarter comes around. So for me, it was a big deal to have it ready.
Oh, I wish more people think the way you do, because I there are some Kickstarters I have supported, and I have never seen, to this day, any of the product that they promised. And so I would like to see more people actually do the product and have it ready before people start giving them money. But of course, some people don't have a lot of money. I remember one Kickstarter was said, hey, I want to do a comic, but you know, I need the money first. So if you give me money, I'll make a comic. And everybody said, that's not how this works. So I got a kick out of that. But it's a very interesting thing with Kickstarters and stuff. So did you Kickstarter the other book as well? Or is this the first Kickstarter for you?
Yeah, this is my fourth one.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So why did you choose Kickstarter? What was it? I'm sure the finances would be very helpful. But you get a chance to, you get to build up a fandom as well. So were those the reasons you kind of went to Kickstarter?
Yeah. You know, I wanted to have control of the IP. I wanted to have the control of the release. Some things that I do, certain things that like a publisher might not like. I give the comic book, I give the PDF away for free generally. And I did that because when I first started making comics, I kind of wanted to skip some steps. So, okay. Yeah, I wanted to skip some steps. So I had the comic book, and I kind of gave it away for a while because I wanted to really, I really wanted to get people to like it. I want the word of mouth going. And I did something similar with Intrusive Thoughts. I had a preview link available it's still available. So like that's something a publisher might not let you do, you know, and they have the infrastructure to not have to do that. But I don't have the infrastructure. That's just a decision that I made.
Right. Now, you did do it in color. Some people do these things in black and white, especially horror type things like this is. They'll tend to do it in black and white, but you did it in color. And I thought that was a good choice. I think based on the story, color really works well with this story. So that was pretty cool. Of course, there's one of the main colors is red. I mean, the bully wears a red top, and the truck is red, and all other things. There's several other things that are red, so I get a kick out of the use of the color red, which is always good in horror. Was that on purpose, or did you decide that, or was that the artist? How did you get that decided?
That kind of stuff, I have a really good, DNS is a veteran, so it is very easy for me to just like kind of let him do his own thing. You know, I want to stay out of his way. So okay. Yeah, that was more him.
Very good. So, based on how long it took for you to put the first issue together, do you know when the second issue might be coming?
No, I have so much stuff up in the air. I actually have a third series I'm waiting to kind of release, depending on how this goes. You know, if the Kickstarter goes great, then I can kind of increase production. If it's, you know, then we'll have to kind of regroup. So I wouldn't know that right now, but I'll know once the campaign is over.
Okay, so that's very good. It's sometimes the first issue is where you're going to learn all the stuff like you're talking about, like knowing how long it takes and the money and those kinds of things. It's pretty good. So talk to me about the Kickstarter itself, because it was your first one. Did you how did you go about setting up how much you wanted and the stretch goals and things like that?
Right. The stretch goals for me is always important to make sure it's all digital, right? I don't want to have to get more physical packaging. I want something that I could deliver instantly. So that was always concerned. And as far as the goal, I kind of did, like, what's the minimum I could get and still continue the series? Because you'll make money back on the trade, because when the trade's done, the art is already finished. So you're really only paying for printing and then whoever's arranging the trade. So I knew that. So that's kind of what I do. Like, if I get like $1 less than this, I can't keep going. That's what I would set the goal to.
Okay, so that's good. Well, you have a pretty reasonable goal, I think. As we're talking, the goal is $4,000, which I don't think is a bad goal at all. I think that's pretty. And then you've got the like a subtitle of sorts. This is "Thoughts Can't Hurt You," right? I like that.
Yeah, kind of right.
That's really good. I like that. Now, of course, one of the things we see right off the bat is we see him as a young child, and we see a police officer, and then there's like a what do you call a ball? The things that people can look and see the future, and he's in there looking, but he's looking at the past, largely. Mm-hmm. And unlike the rest of the book, of course, he's drawing at this point. Everything's black and white because he's just using pencil or pen to draw and stuff, which I kind of find interesting with that. So where did the idea as far as the night terrors and stuff like that, was there something, do you happen to experience those and that's where the inspiration came? Or was this from like reading other books and stories about horror? How did you do that?
Well, no, you just needed something like this person would be going through anxiety, you know, given their situation. So it just made a lot of sense. I haven't had a lot of night terrors. I've never had sleep paralysis, I don't think. But yeah, it just seemed like something that a person in this situation would probably go through and offered up an interesting story opportunity.
Great, great. Now, as far as let's go down the goals and the physical copies are pretty good. You got standard covers, got a variant cover. Now you get to sign physical copy of your choice. I guess with the covers, and that's only $30. And you get Decay and Intrusive Thoughts as a physical bundle for $40, which is good. And you got three issues of Decay in the first issue of Intrusive Thoughts. And you've already got some backers on that, which is really good. And then there's prints. How did you decide to do the prints? Is that like the cover is one of the prints? Because I like the cover real well, although it's not red. It's mostly blue.
It is just really it's just like I just took my favorite moments and kind of just printed it out.
Okay.
Just what I think people would really enjoy.
Okay. Now, of course, you got one of my very favorite levels, the getting drawn into issue 2 of Intrusive Thoughts.
Yes.
I finally found a Kickstarter that I could afford to get drawn into one. It was about a Moby Dick had come back as a zombie whale. And the whole ship and everything that chased them, they were all zombies. And I was able to afford doing that. And I was drawn in, but of course, because they were on a ship, I wear glasses, and so I didn't recognize myself on the ship really well. I said to the guy who created it, I said, "Where am I? I don't see myself." And then, you don't have glasses on. Oh, I said, "That's right. I wouldn't have glasses on." And then he showed me what panel it was. Once I saw it, I said, "Oh, yeah, that's me. That's cool." I've always wanted to be drawn into a comic book. If you're a comic book fan, one of the goals you want in your life is to end up inside a comic. And I applaud you for doing that. That's really great stuff.
Well, absolutely. It's just like a natural extension. Like you want to be a part of this, and then you getting literally put inside, put in it.
Yeah, I think that's such a great thing. I think that I wish more books did that. Some of them, the cost is really prohibitive. If I hadn't done it already, I'd probably be doing it in this one with yours. But it's really kind of a lot of fun. There's nothing better than being in a book. And I was talking to one creator who had friends and stuff, and they kept suggesting that they would be in the book. And he, at first he was kind of like, "No, I don't know if this is a good idea." But then he started coming up with story ideas that he started writing around these characters. And now all of a sudden he's got all these people who he didn't originally have in the book, but now they're all in there. Right. And I got a huge kick out of that. How many people can get drawn in? You can get, there's no limit, I don't think. Is there?
No, there's no limit. I mean, at a certain point, it would be a problem, but I don't think we'll hit that, it'd be a matter of space and the amount of characters, but I don't think that'd be a problem.
In issue 2, do you have a lot of characters in there?
Yeah, absolutely. It's big. It's like 32 pages.
Okay, so it's the same size as this one.
So this would be 4 more pages.
Oh, is it? Because 32, the file you made available to me was 32.
So that's got the... Okay, so that's the... When you do the cover, the covers don't count. So
oh, be, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
28 then, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so all right. So that'll be good. Well, that'll be good to do. Knowing the story already for the second book, are there certain kinds of characters you kind of hope that they appear in the book, or are you open to whatever the people want to be in? How are you approaching that?
I mean, it'd more or less be like side, not, yeah, like background characters or something that we work in there. They're not about to be the main character, of course.
Of course, yeah. What about, is it too early to say what the backgrounds are? I mean, like, is this more school kids? Is this...
I mean, it could be anybody inside the school, you know. It could be like a teacher, you know.
Okay, that'd be good to see. Like, all those kinds of people are really important in schools. Now, as far as the story goes, as far as the characters, okay, you said there might be 5 issues. Are all 5 going to be centered around the high school?
Not the high school, but kind of the incident, like the high school is kind of where the inciting incident kind of starts. Mm-hmm. So it'll have an element. It'll be an element of that, but not really like take place there.
Okay. And I like to repeat it a couple of times. And Kickstarter.com, it's Intrusive Thoughts, number 1, a 28-page horror mystery. And as we're talking, we're recording this a little early, you've got over 100 backers already. So you're off to a good start. And again, like we said, Thursday, February 23 at 8 a.m. is when this will come to fruition. Now, of course, we always have to give the important part is that this project will only be funded if you reach your goal by that date, the 23rd of February at 8 a.m. So something to do. If we want to see more of this good stuff, and we want to see these things develop, so we need to have people get in there and pledge. Once you get done listening to this interview, be sure to get out there and make sure that Anthony has the support he needs to keep going. Really good stuff. So right now you're not sure how long it's going to take between issues. So something, if you get more than your goal, will that help speed up the process?
Oh, 1,000,000%. Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Because I always like to ask that, because sometimes people get a lot of extra money and it doesn't seem to speed the process up. And I'm always going, well, what's the extra money for then?
That's a good question.
You know, I don't understand what that's all about. Now, of course, and you have a timeline down towards the bottom of the page. The cost is divided. The money is being – you've got a good – a chart to show what it's going to be, and it's divided. The art is 60.4%. The printing is 18.9%. There's taxes and shipping. Of course, those good guys get involved in fees. You know, Kickstarter has to have their share out of everything. And so you've got them all divided up and very clearly defined, which I appreciate. So many Kickstarters don't have that, and I'm always kind of puzzled. I'm less likely to donate to somebody who doesn't have all that nice and clearly defined. So I think you've done a great job with that.
Thank you so much.
It's good to see. So as we said, this is going to conclude on February 23, which is always a very important part. I say that many times because I people will go listen to something else or get distracted, and then suddenly they come back and they don't realize when the thing is going to conclude. So I want to make sure the $4,000 goal, and I think that's very much easily attainable, very easily attainable. So I think that's not going to be a problem. Is there anything else that people should know about this project?
Oh no, that's it, man. Deals with mental issues. It's a really great book, and it's definitely something to check out.
Is this something going to be really special? Like I said, I appreciate the fact that there's a person of color as the main character, because comic books tend not to do that.
Yeah, unfortunately, so yeah, you're right.
I like to see those kinds of things when they came up. And now the subtitle is, it says it's an atmospheric horror comic which deals with themes of loneliness, anxiety, and depression. So there's all kinds of good things to go with it. And I'm really fascinated to see what you've got in mind. Let me read real quickly the little description that's in here, too. It says, when a high school bully pushes a latchkey teenager's corroding mental state over the edge, Tyler's mind fractures, birthing a ravenous demon formed from his damning intrusive thoughts. In order to keep his darkness at bay, Tyler must learn to love himself before he atrophies and consumes everything and everyone he's come to know. So he really is the main part of the story, all right. That's pretty
amazing. Yeah, absolutely. He's like definitely the main character. He's got a lot going on.
Because that's I'm going to be fascinated to see how that gets explained, because I'm always interested as how somebody all of a sudden, they seem to have supernatural abilities and stuff like that, which it sounds like. I don't want to repeat that again, but there's a couple of really interesting parts about that that I'm going to really be fascinated to see. And it's going to be really something. So are there other projects you're working on that we should be aware of?
This is the big one. This is the one. And like I said, depending how this goes, will kind of shape what my strategy is going forward.
Okay. And if people want to follow you on social media, how do they do that?
At Stokes the Writer on Twitter and Super Comic Bros on YouTube.
Okay, one last time. It's called Intrusive Thoughts Number 1, a 28-page horror mystery. This project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, February 23rd at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. So I think this is very doable. I'm really looking forward to seeing this and future issues. So maybe next time we get a chance to talk some more and get a chance to see how things are progressing as far as the story. And now, do you have an idea where this is all going to end up already?
Absolutely. Yeah, I got all kinds of stuff planned.
I was really surprised one time when I interviewed a comics creator, and I thought he planned all this stuff in advance. But then when I asked him about it, he said, oh, no, what happens is me and the editor get together and we figure out how that's going to all resolve. I said, what? How do you write a story when you don't know where you're going? It's like driving a car and not knowing, you know, where the destination is. So I don't understand how people do that. That gives me faith in what you're doing when you already know where you were heading. So I'm really happy about that.
Absolutely.
So, Anthony, it's great talking with you, and I'm looking forward to more from you in the future. And, you know, keep up the wonderful stuff. I'm dying to see what else you have in store for us.
Absolutely, man. Thank you.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.